Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I know a lot of parents out there and coaches out there and kids out there want youth sports badly. They love youth sports. I love youth sports. I think sports are healthy. I think sports are a safe place for people to fail and succeed. I think sports teach conflict resolution and obviously build character. We say stuff like that, but I think it's true. But the problem has been that the directives from the state of Oregon have not been crystal clear. I have invited the spokesperson for Governor Kate Brown on the show. I have made a request for Governor Kate Brown to come on this show to talk about sort of where youth sports fit. I think she's got probably bigger things on her plate for now. But I wanted to bring on a medical expert in light of all this, maybe to give some context. And the best expert that I could think of was Dr. Rambod Rubash. Dr. Bod, you know him from back in the day. He's now in Mississippi. Dr. Bod, how are you?
I'm doing very well. I like the intro of you know him from back in the day. Makes me feel old school.
We used to have a benchmark that we could play. I don't know. You want to cue it up, Judah Newby? Do we have the Dr. Bod benchmark still? The situation?
That,
we called him?
Let me try.
I bet
try.
You can
Let's
find
what
it.
What
are you doing in Mississippi? Why would you give up the great state of Oregon to go all the way down in Mississippi?
Oh, I think we could do a whole session on that alone. I will say in a nutshell, the people here are very, very nice. They're kind people. The work we do here is much appreciated. And it's a nice, quiet place to raise children.
You guys obviously have SEC football. Does that have anything to do with it?
Absolutely not. I am a Duck fan through and through. I fly that banner as much as I can, and SEC football is a negative factor in my mind with the tribalism I see down here with that.
I'm curious what the average SEC or Ole Miss or Mississippi State fan thinks of Oregon. When you have that flag flying, what do they say?
You know, it is really shocking to me how many Oregon fans there are down here. It seems to be the second, well, especially in the heyday, in the Chip Kelly days, it seemed to be everybody's second favorite team, kind of like back in the day when everybody liked the Hurricanes or the Fighting Irish or Georgetown basketball. It was everybody's cool other team that they rooted for. And you'll see a not insignificant number of cars with Duck stickers or Duck kind of license plate adornments. And I'm always shocked by it. And they're not expatriates, I can assure you that.
Dr. Rambod Rubash is our guest. Dr. Bod, we call him on this show. Give us an idea, all right, when we bring up youth sports, what is sort of the, you know, let's take the temperature first in Mississippi. What do you see with your own kids? Are the sports teams back out there? And how do you balance that with what is healthy for kids psychologically, socially, versus, hey, there's still a pandemic going on and a virus out there?
So the appetite for getting back is pretty high. Locally, baseball has started practicing again here. The soccer teams want to train, and you know there's some training going on with distancing. But it's important to note there's an appetite. There is a sense that we've achieved something and we've gotten over the hump. But that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, Oregon really is the model case in terms of the state response. And I follow Oregon closely. You know, my parents, my brother lived there, and I follow Mississippi closely. And it's a tale of two states. Oregon had case number 17, and I happened to diagnose the very first case in the state of Mississippi. So I know we're at least five, wait, 5 weeks behind Oregon in terms of when this disease hit the community. And Oregon has almost double the population of Mississippi. But because of Oregon's robust, early, aggressive response, the case rate per 100,000 population is only about 115 in Oregon, whereas in Mississippi, it's nearly 600, even though it started 5 weeks after the fact. So the prevalence of disease is really high right now, and the risk of attracting disease now is more than it was 3 months ago when we first started the shutdown. And so the argument's always been from the side of youth sports or kids going back to school in general is, well, the kids don't seem to get this as much, or it's not as severe of a disease. Well, that is true, and it is based on the knowledge that we have at this moment. So the kids, in regards to the frequency with which they get this illness, seems to be lower. The frequency with which they tend to spread this disease, however, does not seem to be any lower. We know that about 50% of the people that get this illness, especially skewing towards a younger age group, are completely asymptomatic when they acquire it. And they're still shedding and are infectious or contagious during that time. So kids serve to be an important vector in regards to spreading this disease. And that vector goes home with their parents, who are much more susceptible to morbidity and mortality, which means not just death, but consequences relating to the course of this illness. Oh, by the way, we don't really have an answer as to how this will affect us down the road. So most of us in the listening audience acquired chickenpox as children in terms of getting the disease. The younger generation got it from a vaccine. Those of us that actually got the disease, we are at risk for a recurrence of the disease in the form of shingles, which can also have morbidity associated with it. So we don't know what the long-term consequences of obtaining this disease are for children or parents. So from a medical standpoint, what I advise people is just give us some time. We're getting close. We're getting close to some game changers, and we can talk about what those may be in just a little bit if you like.
Yeah, let's go there first, because what are those game changers that, you know, in the medical profession you're looking at, hey, this is a headline breaking news moment?
So four things, really. And we'll start with the least likely first, and that's just a straight-up miracle. Some change in terms of the mutation rate of the virus, or a seasonal variation, or we find out that, unbeknownst to us, a great majority of people have actually been infected with this and have immunity to it. So we're much closer to herd immunity, where we would require about 70% of the population, or roughly 200 million Americans, to get it before we got to that point. That would be the miracle route. The second, and I think in terms of time proximity, likelihood would be a vaccine. Now, I'm involved in clinical trials personally, so I know that we are looking at phase 3 human trials to start now. And those trials typically last 2 years before they're closed, which may mean that we could get this vaccine a little bit before 2 years if the data for that is robust. And there's lots of vaccines being tried. The next game changer or miracle, which I think is the more likely scenario, is a game-changing therapeutic, meaning we really have a cure for this, or we have a treatment that can keep people from dying. And that, I think, is more likely to occur before a vaccine, because there's so many different therapeutics being studied. And then what I think may occur before all of that is point-of-care immediate testing. So this is similar to a urine pregnancy test, where you can get the results within minutes, or a rapid strep test, where you could potentially give a sample of saliva, put a dipstick in it, and see if it's positive or negative. And those are also being studied right now. And if those become massively available so that we can test people frequently on a cheap and recurring basis, and they're accurate, well, that is a true game changer, because then you can test people before they participate in work, school, sports, whatever, and have a real good idea of who's sick and who's not. Because right now, we can't rely on symptoms, because we know that roughly 50% of the carriers are completely asymptomatic.
Dr. Rambod Rubash is our guest. Dr. Bod, there's a lot of debate, I think, you know, family to family about, you know, is this the common cold? Is this worse than the common cold? Can you address that a little bit? When somebody says to me, hey, we're essentially fighting a glorified cold here, how much do you bristle?
Oh, there's so much information to go against that I don't even know where to start. Well, let's just start with the mortality rate, where it is at least six times worse than any flu pandemic this side of the 1918-1919 Spanish flu pandemic. And these numbers aren't over yet. We have over 100,000 deaths in the United States. And by the end of the calendar year, that could triple. There's never been a flu that's been remotely close to that in terms of just pure killing power. In regards to the severity of the individual illnesses, I have never seen in 16 years of medical practice, a flu that affects people with this level of severity. There are young people that go on ventilators. There's young people that require ICU stays, and there are young people that die of this. So this is a whole different sort of ballgame compared to the regular influenza. Oh, by the way, that regular influenza has not gone. This isn't a zero-sum game. We have this on top of the upcoming flu crisis. So this fall and winter is likely going to be much, much worse than what we had in the spring and the summer, and that's important to bear in mind as well.
How surprising is this to you? I mean, you know, for all of us, you know, we keep saying no one could have seen this coming. In the medical field, though, you know, you deal with viruses and mutation all the time. Is this truly surprising, you know, when colleagues talk with you?
Well, academically, you're not surprised by this because we knew the likelihood of a zoonotic illness, meaning an illness that goes from animals to humans, could cause a pandemic. But practically, it absolutely surprised us. The speed with which it spread, the severity of the illness, the ever-changing nature, quite frankly, how unprepared we were for it as a country, the lack of supplies was shocking. The course of testing was shocking. I mean, we were literally caught with our pants down, and all of that was absolutely surprising.
Dr. Broad, the parents that reach out to me, a lot of them are talking about the social and psychological benefits that youth sports give their kids. What do you say to that when you frame it against sort of the medical stuff that you see going on? And then I want to talk a little bit about what sports teams might be able to do that you think is safe. But let's start with the social and psychological part.
Okay, well, let's think about this in terms of a scientific trial. If you were going to go and do an experiment and say, I'm going to take one group of kids and I'm going to put them in sports because I think there's a psychological benefit that they gain, and I'm going to take another group of kids and I'm going to keep them quarantined, and I'm going to see what happens to this group after a year in terms of whether or not they get COVID-19 or whether or not they have some psychological benefit. In order to run that study, you'd have to take it through an institutional review board who would decide if this is an ethical study to do. And these things came about as a result of non-ethical medical studies that occurred in Nazi Germany or the Tuskegee syphilis trials in Alabama. And because we need to regulate the risks and the benefits to patients who are participating in studies, this institution exists. So if you're going to try to do this study, no IRB in the world would allow this to happen because of the theoretic possible minor psychological improvement compared with the risk on the other side. You would never be allowed to run this scientifically. And to propose that we do this with our children because we think there's a theoretic benefit in regards to their psychology as opposed to being in a group quarantine, that would never pass ethical muster. And when we look at what would be the benefits of going out and exercising or playing sports, you also have to bear in mind this kind of group loneliness or this group quarantine that we're engaging in is very different than if we were actually lonely and other parts of the community were active. That's true loneliness. When we're doing something together, this group quarantine, there's an esprit de corps that we're all doing something together. And we don't know if that mitigates the sense of isolation that you normally would have when you feel as though you're the only one not participating. So from a psychological benefit versus risk, that risk-reward ratio makes zero sense, and no institutional review board would allow that study to proceed. So I would not recommend us experimenting on that on our own. In regards to what teams can do, it depends on your resources. If you're professional and you can put people in the bubble and you can test them all the time, I think you can safely conduct your activities. If you're not and you're looking at youth sports, I think there's tiers in terms of risk, and the CDC has these kind of laid out. The lowest risk is performing individual skill drills and conditioning at home, either alone or with your family members. If you go to team-based practice and hopefully still socially distance, well, it increases your risk somewhat. And if you go to within-team competition, you get more risk. Squad competition within your geographic area is even more, and the highest risk is traveling amongst geographic regions to compete. So when you're thinking about what you can do in regards to team sports, I think it's reasonable to conduct outdoor activities very far distance, further than the 6 feet, because we honestly don't know how far these things travel in the state of exercise. It's never been studied in regards to aerosol spread outdoors, indoors, while exercising, and what the rate of infection would be. So when I gave advice to our local soccer club, I told them to go 20 feet apart. I told them to have the coaches wear masks. The players down here, I did not recommend wearing masks because it's so hot and humid. I think they'd be playing with it all the time and wouldn't be able to function. But ideally, if you could tolerate that, masks on the players as well. And I think that would be reasonably safe to try in low infectivity places to give a reasonable shot at some semblance of reactivity with youth sports.
You have two sons. Are they active in sports, and are you going to let them participate this summer?
They're absolutely active. It's the bulk of what they do voluntarily with their time, for sure. And in regards to participation in anything resembling competition, that's a hard no. I have acquiesced and allowed the aforementioned guidelines for their soccer club outdoors, all players 20 feet apart, no touching with hands or heads of the ball, and coaches masked with really essentially working on skills and some passing. I think that's a reasonable thing to do. I would not feel good about doing that for an enclosed space like basketball or volleyball unless all the athletes were masked. Just quite frankly, because the aerosol droplets, if there's some aerosol spread, which more evidence is starting to point in that direction, it would just linger in the air in indoor settings.
I have a friend who's a surgeon, and I was walking with our youngest daughter, who's now four, and we started to come close to him, and he said, "Hold right there, stay 6 feet away." He said, "She's a super spreader." You know, what about coaches? Because I think it's, you mentioned the coaches with masks. I think that that's where we really could potentially see a negative impact if youth sports rush to get back.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You think about coaches, you think about referees, and you also think about those parents. So these kids are indeed super spreaders because they're going to be relatively asymptomatic and because their level of interaction with one another is higher than the average adults. They get closer together, they slap hands, they forget about distancing. So once they spread it to one another and then they get in the car with their parents, now you don't know if those parents have those underlying risk factors that can make this disease a very severe disease. And now you've gone to a potential psychologic benefit for kids participating in youth sports to potentially making those same kids orphans because their parents had underlying health conditions that caused them to die from this illness. So we just don't have enough information to take those risks at this point, in my opinion.
All right, Dr. Rambod Rubash, any parting words you want to leave parents with? Because I think part of this is we've all been home, we're homeschooling kids, we love our kids playing sports, but I think some of it too is that parents like sort of the social aspect for their kids and also themselves. I think a lot of parents miss youth sports.
I absolutely agree. I miss it as well. I think there's a couple of things that can be silver linings here. This can be the opportunity where you partake in something different that you normally wouldn't and don't have to worry about I'm falling behind on my competitive sport. This may be the time for yoga. This may be the time to do a stretching program or just a straight conditioning program, something that you can do individually. Also, the other piece of good news is masks absolutely work. And initially when this pandemic broke out in the U.S., there was a real fear that we wouldn't have enough masks for healthcare workers. Well, we've kind of gotten over that hump in regards to healthcare workers. We're also getting over that hump in regards to the general population having at least cloth masks. So if everyone, and I mean everyone, wears masks, the rate of transmission is much, much lower. And this is why we theorize some of the Asian countries did so much better, or Asian cities for that matter, compared to, say, New York City, which has almost 200,000 cases by itself, and Hong Kong with similar density and similar population with a fraction of those cases and I think only a dozen deaths. We think maybe because that's a culture in which mask wearing is common and most people did wear masks even when they were out and about, that the likelihood of spread is much less. So if you're going out and doing things that are reasonable and socially appropriate for your local area, if everyone wears a mask, the likelihood of transmission is far, far less.
The New York Times surveyed 511 epidemiologists about when they personally would do an activity again. They asked them about going to a sporting event. Less than 1% said they would go to a sporting event now. The vast majority, 64%, said they would wait more than 1 year. What do you think is going to happen with college football and sort of the rabid, unhinged college football fan?
So I think this is really where we will get in a picture of what our country really values. So from a parent, if I had a collegiate athlete, I absolutely would not want them to participate in sports because of that aforementioned risk-reward ratio. Even though they're less likely to have a mortality from this, although we've had about 8,000 people die from the 18 to 44 age group, which is not insignificant, I definitely would not want my child to take on that risk for the reward of what? In the case of football and basketball, we know the reward is money. And the money that comes in from those two sports also fields the scholarships for the ancillary sports, the field hockeys, the lacrosse, the gymnastics, and all those. So that's where I think people are going to try to bring sports back, mainly for that TV money. And if they put enough money into it and test those athletes and test them regularly and keep them relatively quarantined, I think they could pull it off. But I, as a parent, would feel as though my child was being taken advantage of for the monetary gain of a group of people of which they don't personally share in. So that, to me, seems very hypocritical, and it would be a marker of what our country really stands for if we go down that path.
Dr. Rambod Rubash, you're the best, Dr. Bod. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate you.
Really enjoyed it.
There he is, Dr. Bod. I want your phone calls. You're a parent. You got a kid playing youth sports. 503-417-7575. How comfortable are you with a return to play, a return to practice? How tuned in are you? How worried are you? What protocols and precautions are you taking? I want to hear from parents who have kids who play youth sports and coaches as well. I get it. It's frustrating. Parents out there, I've got kids. You've got kids. You're wondering where youth sports falls under the governor's directives. Phase one, phase two, what county are you in? What sport are they playing? Why can't kids swim? Why can't kids play soccer? A lot of questions. I want your phone calls on that front. Also, did you hear what Dr. Rambod Rubash said? 503-417-7575 is the phone number. I want to hear from you. Let's talk about it, and let's kick this around. I know from our standpoint, got two kids that wanted to play soccer. We sort of bagged it, and they're not really missing it because they didn't really know that, you know, what soccer season is when the young ones are out there at 4 and 6. But I want to hear from you. 503-417-7575.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.